Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you a sensational episode where each story hones in on one of the four senses that accompanies taste.
Many of the smells that we encounter in everyday life actually exist out there in the cosmos.
Food carries all these culturally specific meanings. The fact that, you know, when you see an apple, it's not just an apple, right?
I was mostly interested in thinking about what knobs ASMR was pulling on, maybe, or how we could explain it from a psychological or emotional or evolutionary standpoint.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. A cool few things to mention. We have on Heritage Radio Network's Instagram account, Comté TV Spot, and it's really cool because they take a deep dive into the farm and talk about how the farming is done, the breeds of the cow, and then just about Comté production as well. So again, take a look. It's on at @Heritage_Radio Instagram's account. And if you're looking for the post, it has a cow in the thumbnail, and it's Comté TV. Also, if you haven't listened yet to Carlos Yescas's raw milk episode, please take a listen. It has amazing insight into the international community and how they're handling raw milk policies around the world. And then one more thing to note, because we've been super busy at Cutting the Curd, Jessica Kesselman is next week going to be speaking with David Gremmels of Rowe Creamery and going over the climate change situation and how the world is just rapidly changing overall out west. She's going to get a really cool interview with him, and we're looking forward to that. But right now, today on Cutting the Curd, I have a super awesome guest. Her name is Megan Aircole, the cheese and coffee buyer of Adams Fairacre Farms in Poughkeepsie, New York. Meg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kara.
So how's your fall going so far?
It's going really well. Doing a little apple picking here in upstate New York. Cutting a lot of cheese, selling a lot of cheese, talking about cheese. So excited to be here.
I bet. So actually, I was curious. Poughkeepsie is known. Would you say Poughkeepsie is known for its leaf foliage, for its outdoorsy fall situation?
Yeah, definitely. As you head further north, that gets a little bit more prevalent. Southern Vermont is beautiful this time of year, but the Hudson Valley's definitely got some cool stuff going on. Our apple orchards are beautiful. We have a lot of outdoor activities, pumpkin picking, you name it, we got it going on.
So would you say then that you're getting more people just traveling to the area and then as a result coming to your cheese counter to do like fall pairings or apple pairings? Do you see more of that at your cheese counter?
Absolutely. You know, the climate's been a little bit weird just because maybe this time a year ago, we'd be having more conversations about cheese and, you know, really going through things. And that has started to pick up a little bit. But when we started wearing masks and all of that, it became much more of like get in, get out quickly. So it's nice to be able to speak about cheese on a show like this where we can actually have a conversation and not feel awkward.
Totally. No, it's a nice relief for sure. You know, I had like a funny thought even, and this is a little bit of a curveball. Has anyone ever come to the counter and been like, I have these color leaves and I want you to interpret them and give me a cheese per leaf, you know?
No, but if you want to come in with some leaves, we can definitely have some fun.
You'll be like my leaf reader. Instead of like tea reading, you know, the tea leaves, you'll be my true tree leaf reading cheese counter expert.
Yeah, no, I love it. Always up for a challenge, so yeah.
Well, I know how to bring it sometimes. So can you tell me a little bit about Adams Fairacre Farms, like what kind of store it is, and how, you know, basically how it's organized?
Sure. Adams is awesome. We started as a farm stand in 1919, so we celebrated our 100th anniversary last year, which is, woo, go Adams.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah. Pretty awesome. It actually started in the Poughkeepsie location. So they farmed the land and had a small stand on Route 44 right out in front of where our current store sits. Later on, they built an actual structure. So they built a roof and some stilts. And then eventually we got a concrete floor. And then eventually we got some walls. So it's been very much a farm stand focused store, but we've grown to 4 stores. We added a meat and cheese area. We added a seafood department. So it has very much evolved over those 100 years. And now we are definitely produce focused, but have an amazing selection of fine meats, fine seafood, a great deli counter, and then, of course, my love, cheese. So it's a pretty cool place to work.
How many cheeses do you guys carry? Because I know it's a lot.
Well, I have 59 refrigerated feet of cheese, and that's 4 shelves high. So it ranges between like 500 and probably 650, 700.
Wow. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Beyond just the cheese portion, we also sell coffee, olives, grated cheeses. It's a lot.
And you, so when did you get to the cheese counter? Like, when did you start acting as the buyer there?
So I started in 2016. I was with the store already. I'm classically trained from the culinary, so I was actually in prepared foods. And the opportunity came about to be the manager in cheese, and I kind of jumped at it because I got to talk about something I truly loved, and got to, you know, help people explore and build their palate, which is really probably one of the most fun parts of my job.
Were you, when you were in culinary school, did you have some cheese exposure then?
Not really. It's kind of unfortunate, but
interesting.
That, you know, you might sit around a table and have a few cheeses in front of you just as a social gathering with friends, but it was never really the focus of the culinary.
I wonder if the school you used to go to would be interested in a cheese program at some point. I wonder if you could, like, spearhead that or something fun.
That would be awesome.
Brainstorming ideas. I like it.
Love it.
Okay, so you have this humongous cheese counter going on. How many mongers do you manage?
21 currently. Yeah, it's a lot. So as I alluded to earlier, we're not just doing cheese. We also have the coffee portion of our counter. So we have a full service coffee counter. We serve lattes and cappuccinos, specialty drinks. So every side of our island is very busy, whether we're cutting and used to be tasting, but not anymore, or serving up lattes or iced lattes. We're definitely one big moving unit.
Well, and I think, so I've been to the store. Can you describe for the listeners the way the cheese counter is set up? Because It's slightly different than I think other stores I've been to.
Yeah, it's a little higher than maybe your traditional counter. It's multi-deck shelving, which for those of you who don't know cheese cases, it's instead of just being one bay, it's actually got like two to three shelves and then a lower bay. So it's quite a big case just vertically and then also goes around. And we kind of operate like a beehive. We have one entrance, lots of busy bees inside, and we go in and out all the time.
And it's in a circle too, or an oval, I guess you might say, the way.
Yeah.
I feel like you can walk, like your eye catches the cheese case and you're like, okay, there's cheese. And then you try to follow it and it's like one big wrap around. Like you keep going and going, and you're like, there's more?
Yeah, wait, it's almost like an infomercial. It's like the, but wait, there's more.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, when you set that up, do you think like, this is where I first want them to, this is what I want the customer to first see. And then like, how do you organize what the next like layers are for them to, did you plan that out? Is that something you worked on?
Yeah, actually, I would love to be able to give you a visual of that, but it was quite a, I don't know, a psychotic mathematical visual of my old case and where I wanted to expand. So I actually gained about 8 to 10 feet when we renovated. I don't have the exact figure, but 8 to 10 feet with three shelves. So that becomes 40 feet, which is awesome. So one of the areas I really wanted to focus on growing, because it is something that we're known for, is our local section. We had unfortunately lost a case prior to our renovation, so we really had to squeeze that into our current footprint, and it just didn't do it justice. You couldn't see how beautiful the cheeses were. You couldn't really have a nice display of them. It was just trying to fit them in so we could offer them. So that was probably my primary focus. Let's make that the spotlight of the case. And I kind of put that on the most triumphant turn, where mm-hmm. I thought there would be some good foot traffic. And it's worked beautifully. We sell a lot of local cheese.
Any local shout outs that you want to give to the cheese producers?
Yeah, I mean, we work directly with a lot of people in our area. So Colin McGrath from McGrath Cheese up in Hudson, he's a good friend. He's awesome. He and Mel kill it daily. I can only imagine how busy they have been. Mm. Rory from Chase Home. What's up, dude? Yeah, it's, I mean, we just have so many local cheese producers. It's really cool.
No, and it's great. I feel like you're looking out for the Hudson Valley, upstate New York producers. I mean, I would imagine, do cheese producers come to you to premiere their cheeses or get like a focus group kind of attention at all?
Yeah. Yep. I've worked very closely with a couple of distributors who kind of support local first. And a few times they've said, you've got a box coming, look for this box and let me know what you think. It's not out there yet. I'm like, oh boy, yeah. What am I getting? But it's pretty awesome.
I love that you get like, look out for a box, because it is like that. Like,
yeah.
Here's this random box, many pieces of cut cheese in it. That's super, super cool. And are you, I guess what I want to segue to now is, what are you seeing fall trend wise? Like what's coming your way in terms of trends?
Well, our trends kind of hinge off of produce because we are such a produce-based store. It's the first thing you walk into, but right next door is us. So if the plums are looking great, then watch out wash rinds and Gruyere. That's what we're going to be selling more of. Right now, the apples are beautiful, nice and plump, very fragrant. So cheddar's been going wild.
Isn't cheddar always wild? I feel like cheddar.
Yeah, cheddar's, I mean, cheddar's one of those things. Wild.
A curious question, because sure. I've been kind of researching fall cheeses. Have you had like fall spice themed cheeses come your way? Are you selling any of those?
Actually, so we do have a couple. We have a pumpkin spice Chev from Nettle Meadow. So it's a Chev cup. It's got pumpkin and also pumpkin, maple, and pumpkin spice. So it's a little on the sweeter side. It's kind of pumpkin pie-y. It's very good. But yeah. Then we also had Daffinois come out with pumpkin seed Daffinois, which when I first read it, I was like, what? Huh. But then I dug a little further, and it's actually roasted pumpkin seeds that are within the curd of the cheese. And so I rolled the dice, brought in a few wheels. It's delicious. It's
I have
so
to
good.
Check that one out. I didn't even know that existed.
I know,
that
right?
Snuck it's, by me.
it's got a beautiful orange rind with the a bloom grown over it. So it's kind of like your fall leaf idea in a cheese. And then within that, it's got these beautifully speckled pumpkin seeds. So you've got little roasting on the outside with the brown and then just bright green in the middle. It's really cool.
I'll have to look out for that one. And this is a triple creme brie fromage d'Auvergne with roasted pumpkin spice. Did I nail that? Is that right?
Pumpkin seeds. So there's no spice.
Yeah. That's the trick in the formula there, really. You're right. It's not the spice.
It's it's a cool cheese. And I mean, d'Auvergne has that like beautiful grassiness anyway. Mm-hmm. But then you mm-hmm. add in the nuttiness from the pumpkin seed, and it's just like, whoa, this is pretty cool.
Okay. Well, I say we take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about your pairings, because I'm excited to hear about what you have in store for us with that. Okay, everyone. This is Cutting the Curd with Kara Warren and your guest Meg Aircole of Poughkeepsie Adams, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineurs on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Kara Warren. Today we have Meg from Adams Poughkeepsie on, and we're going to start talking about pairings for the fall because there's all kinds of pumpkin seed, pumpkin spice, but I think people are drinking heavier now. Or I hope they are because it's that kind of weather. And, you know, I say, why not? Let's talk fall. Meg, what do you got for us today?
All right. So I paired Willoughby from Jasper Hill. I think Jasper Hill does an amazing job with all of their cheeses. But when you're talking fall, you're kind of on the cusp of that warm day and then maybe like a super cold night. So really, pairings kind of run the gamut. So I went with something a little lighter and something a little heavier. So to pair with Willoughby, I have Comes in Goza. It's a Goza that's mixed with a cider made by Kraft, which is out of Newburgh, New York. And so it's gluten-free, it's a cider, but I'd almost put it on par with something that's coming out of France, like a really nice cidre out of France. It's just, it's got that underlying funk and it's got terroir. It kind of rounds out with the Goza. So you're not in like the super fruity territory. You're in something much more dry. Mm. And then that with Willoughby just kind of elevates the flavor of Willoughby. So Willoughby is a beautiful, buttery, funky wash rind that Jasper Hill produces. And it was a wonderful pairing, you know, that with maybe a side of dried apricots, you'd be awesome.
Oh yeah. And you have like that orange theme going on too, which is kind of cool.
Absolutely.
So Willoughby, I don't think I've had a lot of Willoughby, but it's like a thinner disc, right? As well. It's like, about the size of a CD. Who listens to CDs anymore? But anyway, okay. And so is it very funky? You said not too funky.
It's not too funky. I mean, definitely to somebody whose palate is a little bit maybe on the milder side, you might steer clear of it. But if you're looking for something full flavored paired with a crisp drink, it's really an awesome pairing.
And you know, I feel like the Goza, that's like a scary thing to do with the wash rind. I'm impressed you went that way with it, because that could have been like a clash, but it sounds like it went well. Do you recommend you take a sip of the Goza first and then cheese and then sip again, or how would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of annihilated it, so
perfect. That's good.
Yeah, that's always the sign of a good pairing, right? You just don't put either down.
Yeah, you're just going for seconds. That's it.
Yes.
I see.
So it kind of elevated the butteriness of the Willoughby.
I see. Okay. And I'm curious, sort of like a side note, because I haven't tried it yet. Do you get in the Jasper Hill Scream Cheese at all? Have you tried that?
I have tried that. It's wild. I didn't get it in this year. For the listeners that don't know what it is, it's a like bright orange paste that's been rolled in black ash and then develops a bloomy white rind. So it's just like every color you could imagine in a cheese, and it just looks wild.
And originally it's a Weybridge, I believe. So this is like their spin on a Weybridge, from what I understand.
Okay. I just brought like it in because it was called Screamer. I was like, oh, this could be fun.
It's a nice twist on it. But I mean, the Weybridges I've had in the past can be very strong. So I wonder, well, I don't know. It depends on the person, really.
Go for that. It's definitely not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, because I remembered Weybridge being like a more lactic, chalky, younger style cheese that was just bright and very easy to eat. But the last time I tried it, it was like all farm. Like very funky barnyardy, and I was like, "Ooh, this one has grown up. This is different."
Oh yeah, it's definitely the big brother now.
Oh man. Okay, cool. All right, sorry for the segue. Now, your second pairing?
So my second pairing, I went New York State cheddar, which originally came out of Seattle, but we'll give it to New York. I went with Beecher's cloth-bound flagship reserve wheel. I find it to just be really nutty, a well-done and consistent cheddar. And then I paired that with Taconic Distillery's double barrel maple bourbon.
Yeah. Whoa. But
I didn't just pair it straight bourbon. So I made a cocktail with reduced apple cider. I used Adam's private label reduced apple cider. And then a little bit of lemon and the bourbon. And it tastes like apple pie in a glass. So apple pie and cheddar, just a knockout pairing all the time. Wow. And maybe a little bit more palatable for the people that stick their nose up and say, you don't put pie with cheese.
Oh, who says that? I didn't even know that someone could say that.
You'd be surprised. So
I assumed all people knew. You must eat great cheese with pie.
Yes, always.
This drink sounds delicious. I'll have to try to make that. Maybe we can get the recipe posted on Instagram or something. That would be...
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to share it with you after.
Cool. So did you team up with your mongers at the counter to figure out these pairings? Or was it like, how did it go down? Or did you just like take a bunch home and you were like, all right, we're going to work on this?
I'm a little busy, so I just kind of went for it. My assistant manager, Rachel, is always an awesome, like, hey, Rach, what do you think about this? And she's like, oh, I like that, or eh, maybe not. So we kind of dug through it on Monday, and we're, maybe we'll do this with this or this and that. And so I went home, did my homework. Thank you for my homework. And
no problem.
Came up with that.
No, that's good. Because I think people... Do you get customers looking to make Halloween-themed plates or fall-themed plates?
Yeah, I mean, we always get platter questions, or I'm having people over, how many cheeses do I need? What should I serve? Is there anything I'm missing? So that's always a focus at the counter, is like, how do you get somebody to the next level of enjoying cheese? First, they might just pick up a cheese and take a little slice off and say, wow, that was good. But like giving them the next level of flavor. So pairing it with dried fruits or nuts or whatever the pairing is, it helps people to explore more. We used to do that through sampling and sampling pairings. Obviously, that's gone to the wayside. Currently.
Is there a new okay way to sample at a cheese counter yet that you found, or still no?
No. I mean, we jokingly talk about conveyor belts and flinging things in people's mouths, but yeah, no. I think it's
We should think about a sushi belt, you know, like the belts in Japan. You're right. Like, just have them come out in ounce cups for people.
it's really a bummer because... you know, you give these amazing pairings, or you give these suggestions, and you really want to see people's reaction when they actually take that first bite and they love it. And they're just like, wow, I need some more of this. Or you see their face sour and you know, well, that wasn't for them. Let's fix something else. So we're definitely lacking that. But I feel like giving people an opportunity to explore at home with their family is... has been a really cool shift. Like, hey, you know, we're kind of bored at home. What can we do different with cheese? There you go. Let's do something.
And I wonder, do you think that, like, maybe instead of trick-or-treating, people might do cheese plates this year? Because I don't even know how trick-or-treating is going to work this year. I feel kind of sad for the kids, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel sad for the kids, too. Yeah, I think that people, even though they're home, they're looking for something different to do. So if cheese can fill that void for them, I would be happy to help them with that. You know, I think at least for the younger adult crowd, cheese boards, even if it's shared with two or four people, are amazing, because you can just sit there, talk about cheese, and enjoy it at the same time.
Totally. Like, make little bags of crumbled up cheese and be like, and like a little clear cello, whatever bag, and hey, here's the cheese. I don't know. Whatever like makes it. People happy nowadays, you know, it's such a weird time. So
it definitely is.
So for sure. So, I guess I'm curious, like, Thanksgiving wise, what's your game plan?
Eat food.
Eat food. Great. Yeah. Good.
I think we're gonna have a small gathering, you know, just family, and really just the close family. I would kind of guess that most of the country is going to do the same, but
I see it. Yeah,
why not go all out, you know? You've only got 10 people to feed instead of the normal 35, might as well spend a little bit more money on a cheese board. That's going to be crazy.
So I had the same feeling. I think because people will do much smaller groups, they'll treat themselves better and do a more decadent array of cheese or wine and whatever else they're cooking. I think you're spot on about that. Like, it's actually, I'm hoping, better for the industry.
Me too.
It's going to be cool to see.
I think that'll be happening at my house. So let's go, America.
Let's go, America. I love it. Also, a side note, I am sipping on a beer called Rhodes Mary's Baby.
Oh my gosh, I love that beer.
It's aged in rum barrels with vanilla bean.
Yep.
Oh, it's great. And then I'm also munching on Mimolet because this is my lunch hour. So this is what I have. I was like, let me see if I can do a fall pairing. And it actually is working super well with like the saltiness of the Mimolet and then that rum sweetness going on.
Yeah. And there's like that underlying malty, like, deliciousness in that beer. It's so good.
Which is so good. And I feel like it's harder to find that in beers because, you know, I think this is an opinion that a lot of people are fixated on that IPA, piney, kind of fresh or the West Coast citrusy thing. So definitely. I kind of love getting that malty side of things or like clicking into the brown ales or the stouts if you want to go a little heavier. Although this is pretty heavy. This is a kickback. I should look at what is the alcohol on this bad boy? 6.8%. So yeah, that'll make you sit down a little bit.
Yeah. I love how kind of bright the spice on that beer is. It's wild. It's like a trip in your mouth.
I've never had it before. This was just really a first round go ahead. I was, again, just trying to get my hands on like fall themed ideas and really good. Really, really good. But I think it's like, I could have this, and then what's the name of your cocktail, by the way, that you invented?
So I don't know. I was trying to think of a cool name before we got on, and we were like spitting stuff around the other night. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Cydron sounds like
Cydron sounds like a robot. I feel right. Like maybe like private class Apple something. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's so like, yeah. Cydron was the best thing we came up with, and it's not very good, so open to interpretation.
Okay, Cutting the Curd fans, you know, hit us up on Instagram and give us a name for Meg's drink when we share it. That's what we'll test if people are listening to our show and if they can come up with a super cool name for the cocktail Meg mentioned earlier in the episode. So at Cutting Perfect. The Curd, let's try it.
Let's
do that. Well, Meg, this has been awesome. I'm so glad you could come on the show today. This has been awesome. Just great. I love talking fall with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That's so cool. Such an honor, and it's really been great.
You're in a good season, my friend. This is like the elite of elite cheese peeps are on this season, so I'm glad to have you on. I know, I wanted to put that weight on you.
Thanks.
You know.
Yeah. I think I just got 2 inches shorter.
Oh, there it is. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening today. I hope you all have a great week. Eat more cheese and stay safe.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.